Hello, everybody, and welcome to Raya Affairs. My name is Francia Morales, and I'll be your host for this episode. Raya is a youth-led international think tank that translates the abstract world of international affairs by simplifying rather than generalizing. Raya is a place where you come to learn about the stories and worries of political leaders, the behind-the-scenes of decision-makers, and how politics impacts and changes your life. This is Raya Affairs, filling you in wherever you are. As always, I would like to give a quick disclaimer that any and all expressed opinions in this episode are welcome, even though they're not a direct or may not be a direct reflection of Raya, as we specialize in unbiased writing. In today's episode, we will be focusing on the president of Azerbaijan, Ilham Aliyev. And with us, we have Reka, who is one of the writers on our research and analysis team. Reka, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hey, Francia, thank you so much for the introduction. So my name is Reka Baranyai, and I'm from Hungary. I'm an international relations student at I University in Spain, and currently I'm doing an exchange semester in Istanbul. And as for Raya, it's my second term here, and I'm part of the research and analysis team as a writer.
Great, thank you so much for the introduction. So before we dive into all of the hard-hitting questions, we have the hardest of them all. And we want to ask you if you could tell us which leader, either dead or alive, who has impacted the world you would want to have one conversation with. It can be over dinner, over coffee, over Zoom, whatever you like.
Yes, it is a very hard question indeed, but I think I would like to talk to George Herbert Walker Bush, former American president. He's also known as Bush Senior because also his son later became president. George W. Bush, I think, is most known for the 2003 invasion of Iraq. But I would love to talk to Bush Senior because I think he was a very uniquely pragmatic leader, one who was not rigidly influenced by a certain ideology, which I think makes him very interesting. For example, his approach to the end of the Cold War was very interesting to me. He was the president from 1989, so specifically at the time when US hegemony was becoming more obvious and the USSR was declining. But instead of treating the USSR as a defeated enemy, he tried to involve them in international coalitions and in the international community. So I would be very much interested in talking to him. And also I would definitely ask him about his opinion on his son's foreign policy decisions, because they are very different, I think. So
that is super interesting. I think that... No shade to anybody else. That's probably one of the most interesting responses I've ever heard to that question. Thank you very much, Reka. And so with that very nice, super intellectual ambiance, we're going to go into the questions about your article. You recently wrote an article about Aliyev concerning his full takeover of the Nagorno-Karabakh region, which is an formerly, I guess, Armenian enclave within Azerbaijan. And to help our listeners out and give them a bit of a reference about this article and why they should go read it, tell us, please, what is the history of the Nagorno-Karabakh region and why was part of Armenia within what seemed to be Azerbaijani territory?
Thank you, Francia, for the question. Yes, I think it's a very important question to address before we go into the topic because it's so complicated. It's a decades-long conflict. But basically, Azerbaijan and Armenia are neighboring countries located in the southern Caucasus region, and Nagorno-Karabakh is a mountainous territory, which is situated, as you said, inside of Azerbaijan. But despite it being surrounded by Azerbaijani territory, it has been inhabited by mostly ethnic Armenians. And so both Armenia and Azerbaijan have cultural and historical ties to the region. So under the Soviet Union, both Armenia and Azerbaijan used to be part of the USSR, and at that time, Nagorno-Karabakh was considered as an Azerbaijani territory. But because of Soviet control over both nations, there was no major military disputes between them, but ethnic tensions were still rising. So in 1991, the Soviet Union collapsed, and ethnic Armenians immediately declared independence in Nagorno-Karabakh and established their independent Republic of Artsakh. Of course, this was met with Azerbaijani military opposition, and it resulted in a 3 years war, which Armenia won in 1994. and it led to the de facto control of Nagorno-Karabakh by its Armenian population, and also they conquered additional territories from Azerbaijan. But in the next 20 to 30 years, the power dynamics changed between Azerbaijan and Armenia. Azerbaijan became stronger militarily and gained strategic alliances with neighboring countries. And so in 2020, Azerbaijan, under the leadership of President Ilham Aliyev, who we are going to talk about, initiated an offensive to capture Nagorno-Karabakh and take control over it again. They partially achieved this objective, but only took one third of the territory back because Russia intervened diplomatically and mediated peace talks between Armenia and Azerbaijan. As a result of these peace talks, a ceasefire agreement was established and a corridor between Nagorno-Karabakh and Armenia was made, called the Lushing Corridor, which ensured the free movement of people and goods between Armenia and Nagorno-Karabakh. But despite the ceasefire agreement, both parties started to violate the ceasefire after it was established. In 2022, Azerbaijan started to blockade the Lushing Corridor to restrict the movement of people and goods between Armenia and Nagorno-Karabakh. And Russia did not intervene. It had its peacekeepers there, but effectively there was no reaction from Russia. So in 2023, September 19, Aliyev launched an offensive to fully recapture Nagorno-Karabakh. And in one day, Azerbaijan achieved its objective and the Armenian leadership in Nagorno-Karabakh surrendered. And by January 1st, 2024, the Republic of Artsakh officially ceased to exist.
Thank you so much for that background, Rekha. That's really interesting. And I think that it does really cover the whole span of the fall of the Soviet Union and where we are now. And so you gave some background as to the ethno-nationalist tensions that exist there. And so since there are majority Armenians or were majority Armenians in that enclave, why did Aliyev feel entitled to take over that territory?
Well, I think it was mainly due to two factors. Firstly, because the general Azerbaijani narrative since the 1990s, since Armenia took control over this territory, was that this region is a part of Azerbaijan and it has been occupied by Armenians and it has to be reintegrated into Azerbaijan in order for Azerbaijan to achieve territorial integrity and national sovereignty. So that was one factor. And a second one is that I think for Aliyev, it has been also a personal quest to gain back these territories because his father, the previous president before him, Heydar Aliyev, was a well-respected leader in Azerbaijan. He was accredited with establishing the modern country of Azerbaijan and making it what it is today. But he was unable to defend Nagorno-Karabakh from Armenian occupation. And it has been a great pain point for Heydar Aliyev, the father of Ilham Aliyev. And so for Ilham Aliyev, for the current president, it has been a quest to continue his father's legacy and do what he couldn't do. And this can be seen through Aliyev's making the year of 2023 after the reconquest of Nagorno-Karabakh, the year of Heydar Aliyev.
Wow, okay. So you mentioned that this whole takeover happened in one day, which is rather impressive. It's not that small of an area, so it kind of does look like a big splotch, if you will, on the Azerbaijani territory. So how and why was Aliyev able to conquer this territory so effectively?
It has been also due to multiple factors, but mainly because of Azerbaijan's military superiority compared to that of Armenia, and also because by 2023, Armenia became increasingly isolated and lost its alliances. So as for the military, we again go back to the Soviet era, but not too much. So after gaining independence, Azerbaijan became a destination for Western nations to invest in because it had a great oil and gas reserves. So both Haidar and Ilham Aliyev used these oil revenues to invest it in the military, which resulted in Azerbaijan making their military a lot stronger than that of Armenia's. So that's one factor. Also, Azerbaijan made strategic alliances during those years from the 90s to 2023. One of its most important allies has been Turkey, to which it has close ties since gaining independence because of ethnic, cultural, linguistic ties, but also because of their mutual bad relations with Armenia. And this close alliance with Turkey turned into a very concrete military benefits for Azerbaijan since the mid-2010s, because Turkey turned into a significant arms exporter, namely with its Bayraktar TB2 drones, with its drone technology. And Azerbaijan used this drone technology both in the 2020 and 2023 offensives. And it proved to be very successful in combat because drones are very advantageous in mountainous regions such as Nagorno-Karabakh. So there's another factor, because military superiority only does not explain this one-day conquest. Since in 2020, the situation, the power dynamics between these two countries were the same, but still Azerbaijan didn't manage to capture the full territory of Nagorno-Karabakh due to Russian intervention. But by 2023, this Russian involvement was decreasing because, firstly, the war in Ukraine, Russia has been distracted from the Caucasus region. It had to direct its resources and attention to its front in Ukraine. And also because of the deteriorating relations between Armenia and Russia. So since 2018, there has been a pro-Western leadership in Armenia, Prime Minister Pashinyan. And he has been increasingly critical towards Moscow and pursuing relations with the West. So these two factors also made Russia less interested and also less capable of intervening in the side of Armenia. Another factor is also European dependence, European energy dependence on Azerbaijan. And it can be also led back to the Russian invasion of Ukraine and to European sanctions on Russia. Europe needed a new source of energy, and Azerbaijan has been partner in that. In 2022, the EU and Azerbaijan signed a gas agreement promising to double Azerbaijani gas exports to the EU by 2027.
Okay, so clearly this seems like Europe chose the lesser of two evils with regards to its gas and oil supply. And that's quite interesting. So we've seen and we've established that Aliyev has been greatly bolstered by the victory in Nagorno-Karabakh, and we've also seen that he's definitely unrestrained by Europe at the moment, given that they have been able to up their exports to the continent and therefore don't face as many repercussions as maybe they would have in the form of sanctions or anything like that, because Europe is now partly dependent on Azerbaijan for its energy. So does this military operation conclude Aliyev's territorial ambitions in the Caucasus? Is this the last thing that Aliyev wanted, and so we can expect that now everything will be peaceful and dandy, or what can we expect looking forward?
That's a very nice question, Francia. I think Aliyev still have objectives in the Caucasus that he hasn't achieved, also with regards to Armenia. One of these objectives that he has been continuously mentioning also since the 2020 offensive in peace talks with Armenia is connected to Nakhchivan. So Nakhchivan is an exclave, an Azerbaijani exclave in Armenian territory. It is in the west of Armenia, directly bordered by Turkey and Iran. So Aliyev wants to connect Nakhchivan, this exclave territory, to Azerbaijan proper through a corridor going through Armenian territory. Prime Minister Pashinyan has been reluctant to agree to establishing a corridor. So this can be a source of future tensions, I think.
Interesting. Okay, so what would you say that we can expect from the Armenian-Azerbaijani relationship moving forward? Do you think that Armenia has lost a critical leverage in its negotiations with Azerbaijan and therefore might be forced to concede on this point? Or do you think that they'll find support within the West as they've been looking for?
Yes, so the dynamics between Azerbaijan and Armenia are definitely in advantage of Azerbaijan right now, regarding both economic, military power, and also alliances. But now Azerbaijan is becoming, as I said, more critical towards the West and more friendly towards Russia. So maybe it will become the best interest to support Armenia more directly in the future. And since there was no peace agreements signed yet between Armenia and Azerbaijan since the 2023 offensive, the situation is still quite volatile. So Armenia would definitely benefit from Western alliances.
So I want to kind of move towards a different part of the topic. Contemporaneously with your article, we saw that Aliyev pushed forward the elections in Azerbaijan. They were not meant to take place until 2025. And he actually had them take place this February. So, I mean, we definitely saw that after this military operation and in combination with certain factors of the country, like maybe a repressed press and the lack of political opposition, we saw a pretty huge landslide victory for Aliyev. He won with, I believe, almost 92% of the vote. This gave him another 7 years in office, for one, so he'll rule at least until 2031, it probably brings him closer to a lifelong term, which it seems like from the successive politics that we've seen so far in Azerbaijan, this would not be the craziest thing in the world. So, given that he has not lost an election since he came into office in 2003, why was it useful or advantageous to hold early elections in the first place? If we might think that if they had happened next year, he would have won anyway. Why did he do it now?
Yes, as you said, Francia, given the restrictive nature of the elections in Azerbaijan, observed by international organizations monitoring elections, this election and making this election 1 year earlier than it should have been is not for domestic audiences, and also it's not for for measuring domestic support for Aliyev, but more showcasing to international audiences that his leadership is legitimate, he's supported by his people. And regarding making it 1 year earlier, Aliyev wants to use the big domestic support that now he's getting from his successful offensive in Nagorno-Karabakh. And also, Azerbaijan is hosting COP29 this year later in 2024. So he might want it to gain international legitimacy before the big conference.
Yeah, that's right. And it's probably pretty clear. I know that talks have already begun. I've seen whispers here and there, which means I've gotten random notifications on my phone. But I have definitely seen some talks about the fact that Aliyev is probably going to use the COP29, just as the UAE did last year, to broker more gas and oil deals, and while putting himself forward as a leader who looks towards the future and towards sustainability, etc. So I think overall he's got a good cocktail of things that support and bolster him as a leader, not only domestically but internationally. And even if we see domestic discontent here and there, I've also seen some things about there being certain protests about the lack of transparency surrounding the elections and things like that. It's pretty clear that Aliyev is deeply seated on his presidential seat. And so we don't see his power diminishing anytime soon. So zooming out a bit, I wanted to ask you, I think to close off our line of questioning, if you will, what have been the different reactions to this offensive and the consequent election victory of different players in the region? Who are we supposed to be paying attention to? Because many people might have different reactions about Azerbaijan and Armenia, but whose opinion really matters here? Who should we be looking at?
So the main regional powers are Iran, Turkey, and Russia. And the Caucasus has always been a place where these three powers have been competing for spheres of interest. So let's start with Turkey. Turkey has been the closest ally, arguably the closest ally of Azerbaijan. Turkey considered the conquest of Nagorno-Karabakh by Azerbaijan as a strategic win. It's mainly because of their close alliance, of course, and also because Turkey considers it a step forward to establishing the corridor that I was talking about between Nakhchivan and Azerbaijan, which would greatly benefit Turkey since it would give it an access, a direct access to Azerbaijan and then further towards Asia. So Azerbaijan definitely considered the 2023 offensive as a victory, and also the re-election of Aliyev in February 2024. So on the contrary, Iran has been an ally of Armenia, and they definitely conclude the 2023 Azerbaijani offensive as a loss and as a negative thing for Iran, because there is a great Azerbaijani minority living in Iran. And so the reconquest of Nagorno-Karabakh by Azerbaijan means that there could be a national sentiment reviving in Iran, in Azerbaijani communities, which is a negative thing for Iran, as well as Armenia has been a close ally to them. And the corridor that is in the interest of Turkey and Azerbaijan is also opposed by Iran, since it would be established along the border between Iran and Armenia, and therefore it would block Iranian access to Armenian territory. And as for Russia, Russia is an interesting case because it has been the ally of Armenia since 1994, because Armenia joined the CSTO, the Collective Security Treaty Organization, which is led by Russia. It's essentially a Russian-led NATO, kind of a mutual defense organization in Central Asia. But as I mentioned, Russian and Armenian relations have been deteriorating greatly since 2018. Russia didn't intervene in the blockade of the Lachin corridor by Azerbaijan. It didn't intervene in the one-day offensive. So it has been showing a greater lack of intervention in the Caucasus in general, and also with regards to Armenia. So on one hand, Azerbaijan's 2023 offensive was bad for Russia because it showed their inability to intervene due to their concentration on Russia's war in Ukraine. But on the other hand, after the offensive, Azerbaijan started to be more critical towards the West, as I mentioned, and more aligned with Russia. So Russia improved its relations with Azerbaijan while pivoting away from Armenia. Therefore, it kind of made new alliances in the region, which is not necessarily a bad thing for Russia, I think, in their eyes.
Okay, that is quite interesting. It seems that a lot of people are involved in this small patch of land in the South Caucasus. So I think this is rather interesting. And one of the most recent players that we saw enter the field was that in late February, a few weeks after Aliyev won the elections, the foreign minister of Germany actually went to Azerbaijan and met both with Aliyev and met with Yerevan before holding sort of like a trilateral meeting, which these things often happen, right? A minister goes, they have backroom talks per se with each president, each leader. They try to figure out, okay, what are the negotiables? What are the non-negotiables? Where can we find common ground here? But it really seems like no real peace agreement, peace settlement came out of these discussions. Even though the famous mediator of Europe, Germany, went to figure out if they could get something. So what are the reasons why at the present moment a peace settlement seems untenable?
Yes, so there are a number of obstacles that the two leaders have to agree on before being able to establish a peace treaty. One of that is agreeing on a border between Azerbaijan and Armenia. So the two nations, both Azerbaijan and Armenia, hold control of territories of each other near the border, small villages. But both leaders have a different concept of how this established border should look like. So for Pashinyan, the Prime Minister of Armenia, a 1975 Soviet military map should be the basis on how the border looks like. But for Aliyev, it should be the current on-the-ground situation, which the border should be decided based on. So the border is one obstacle that they have to agree on. A second one is that Aliyev said in, I think, in February 2024, that the Armenian constitution should be amended before a peace can be achieved, because in the Armenian constitution, somewhere it says that Nagorno-Karabakh and Armenia should be unified. So Aliyev is consistent on Armenia having to change that before a peace can be achieved. And a third obstacle is again, I'm mentioning the corridor between Nakhchivan and Azerbaijan, but it is a focal point for Aliyev and also a point that that Armenia doesn't agree to. So these three factors, I think, are the main ones that that have to be agreed upon in order for peace to prevail.
Wow. That's so interesting. And I think that that's the perfect point to kind of conclude with, that while we've seen some things move on the ground due to unfrozen battle lines, due to several factors, mostly including the Ukrainian conflict or the war in Ukraine, we might not be able to expect any resolutions anytime soon. So, Reka, with that, I bid adieu to this topic. Thank you so much for coming to speak with us today. It has been such a pleasure to hear you. It's been such a pleasure to read your article, and I recommend all our listeners do the same. You can find her article at riotgroup.org, as well as all of our other content that we post on there. I promise you it is enjoyable, and you should be seeing a lot more of Rika's work coming out, as she's still joining Raya for the summer term and will be publishing much more seminal work. Thank you so much, Rika.
Thank you so much, Francie. It was a pleasure to be here.
It's been a pleasure for me as well. And to all our listeners, thank you for tuning in. Make sure to catch our next episode, which will be shared on all of our social media, which you can follow on Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, as either Raya Group or Raya Now. It has been a pleasure to host you, and I'll see you next time.